Go time.
So we'll call this session to order, and now we'll figure out what we ought to do. When we last left you, we were hacking and chopping our way through the comp plan, which I think we are pretty much getting to the end of that, unless people had revised thoughts after our meeting with the commissioners.
Yeah, I was wondering if you wanted to go through, give it a one more, send it through one more time after your discussion and see about any changes that that you felt were appropriate. There's one area that has been asked to be put back in that was taken out to actually I'd probably be better if I just bring up the map. With your permission, I'm gonna bring up our version that we've been working on. Share screen. Hey, whoever the host is, can you allow me to share screen, please? I don't believe I am the host. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Now this is where I ask, what are you seeing? Are you seeing the
order of the page?
Okay. So you're seeing the tall version of the page there. All right. I'll move it over to here. Can you see it now?
No.
A part of it.
Okay.
See the left side of the draft overlay.
How about this one?
That's much better, yeah.
Okay. So this is the one, the last version that we made at the joint work session with the commission. I don't know that too many actual changes were made. I think I highlighted some areas that that you wanted to consider, but was going to bring it back to you all to make any changes that you felt were that you felt you wanted to make after that discussion. So I'll give it to you, Chairman Dr. James, and you tell me where you want to go from here.
Well, does anybody have any more whereases they want to stick in? Or
I'll leave that to the attorney.
No, I did have one thought that I just want to throw out, and this maybe has to do with it has to do with sort of the whole comp plan amendment and something for P&Z to think about. After the meeting, as I sat back and looked at the entire overlay relative to the issue of the 25 units to the acre, from a developer's standpoint, the difference between 17 units per 17 units and 25 is almost only relevant in the J property. Any other piece of property that is small, if you've got a 2 or 3 acre site, the difference in the number of units from 17 to 25 is really not going to make an economic difference to a developer. Mm-hmm. And on that basis, I don't know if it's a sword that we want to fall on. You know, I mean, unless somebody were to assemble a whole bunch of units in one of the A sections, for instance, and even there, I'm not sure that you have the depth on the property to do a great apartment complex, you're not going to get the 200 plus units that you need for a really viable apartment complex. And then all we're looking at is that one property.
And the so J just property.
Throwing that out there for people to think about.
The J property is the Bank of the Ozarks property. I'll bring it up here for you, which, or I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about the I property. You're talking about the.
That property, yeah. Okay. Yeah. The Holler property. That's almost the only one. Even I, how many, do we know how many acres the I property is?
It's about 1.8, I believe.
So 2 acres, you're talking a difference between 50 units versus 34 units. Or
What about D? How many acres is D?
D is, some of the D properties were made into A properties. I don't know if you can see my cursor,
yeah.
But those right there were formerly D, but because they front on Orange Avenue, the height was reduced back to a two-story, basically. So you've got pretty substantial setbacks along Orlando Avenue and then from the park area, but the possibility of having some pretty looming massing along Orange Ave was a concern. So it was pulled back to where the D height couldn't start back. We kind of used the same line that divides these properties all along parallel to Orange Avenue. So those would be a maximum of two. They're still under common ownership. And I think that owner has one or two more in there, but I think their total ownership is somewhat similar in size to the Holler property. I think it's in the four range, maybe four and a half.
Yeah, but I went on Orange County Property Appraiser and kind of measured out the J property this morning, and it's about 4.1 acres.
So
David's point is that, yeah, it's about the only one that could be affected.
But D, so is, David, but D is 4 acres, you're saying.
Yes.
And Holler and J is 4 acres. So they're about the same size.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe it's just those two properties.
Right.
I have a question. Are we essentially trying to decide whether we want apartments, townhomes, condos there in mapping this out? Is that,
it's about,
I hear whatever he's saying, but like, don't we kind of have to decide as far as what the specifics are as to what we think should be put there?
Yes. As long as it's not considered a taking from what is currently entitled, that would open us up to, potential Burt J. Harris claim, because as it stands right now, any property within the city with commercial or office zoning is entitled to 17 units per acre, but it has to be above the first floor, and there are some restrictions on that. Based on the conversations and how this process has gone, I traditional apartments above your ground floor retail, kind of your traditional mixed use at these densities is questionable if it could be successful, because, you know, as you all discussed last time, there's kind of that magic number you need to get to. But are condos, higher end condos, more feasible? And that's where perhaps those who have worked in the industry and done a little more on the private development side, would private condos be a better possibility to make these projects work at a lower density?
For sustainability, are condos better for the future of Winter Park, because you have owners, not renters, mm-hmm. people who are invested, things like that. So is that, as a group, kind of what, you know, we're putting forth without literally writing in their condos?
You can. I'm not sure that you couldn't write in condos because you can write in a minimum square footage, which we've already done.
I mean, yeah, I don't mean blatantly say, hey, condos have to go here. I just mean like when we're deciding on the specs and the and everything, are we as a group saying we think there should be condos here and tailor all the specs to condos rather than apartments or anything else?
Yeah, owner occupied. I think that's a good question. I think you'll get a potentially a higher quality product. You still get some people down there, which mixed use, as I'm sure you've all heard me say 1,000 times, is you've got to have people there 24/7, you know, going back to Jane Jacobs, eyes on the street.
Hey, Bronx, but we're not ruling out a hotel either, right?
No, sir.
We figured
no,
out sir. That the units per acre only applies to apartments.
Correct.
To right. hotels, that's commercial.
Hotel is an allowed use. What we say is boutique hotel, which if it's you try smaller. To find the, it is, but if you look at the definition, it usually means smaller, but how many of you would say that the Alfond is a boutique hotel? I think most of us would, because it's, you know, it's, I think the definition is a hotel that gives each guest a unique and special experience. And there's no perfect definition for boutique hotel, but a maximum number of rooms, I think, would be appropriate.
I know, and management wise and so forth, we had a couple. They're 50 minimum boutique. You can't get an operator to take over a boutique. Typically, they're operated by a third party, including the Alfond, which is more than 50 keys. But
yes,
but yeah, I think we've kind of figured out that the highest and best use right now, as proposed, is hotel for this area, which might make sense. And kind of on David's note, I think there's I'm getting a sense that there's some maybe decent resistance to increasing the density there. And I studied a couple townhome products around Winter Garden, Winter Park, and otherwise, and 17 units an acre is close to making it a viable viable townhome project. Mm-hmm. If that's the leaning, then maybe we should take note of that. And unless we hear otherwise, that's kind of what I'm hearing from the P&Z, from the commission.
Mm-hmm.
I think we got a letter, of course, from some folks in there. And I think that kind of gets back to Melissa's question.
I think the place that is that has been made into the what could be the best project is the I property being right across the street from a new world-class park. Obviously, I think in the commission making the decision on having that be park, it certainly makes I a very, very attractive piece of property. It'll have the bike path going right in front of it. I think if it had the opportunity for, you know, outdoor restaurant space overlooking the park, it could be very nice. And I know that the bank, the owners, I've talked to a number of times, they want to build their bank branch there, but they were interested in doing a more mixed use product where maybe they had some units and other things like that. So plus you've got some more density to the south where you've got the Mead Garden condominiums, and there's one more there, but
well, back to Melissa's point, are we leaning more toward owner occupied as opposed to apartment?
This is Dan. May I speak to that issue?
Yes, please.
I would avoid putting any restrictions on the form of ownership of property. That doesn't really speak to the use or performance standards. There are some legal issues that could be presented in trying to modify the manner in which someone owns property or to not allow rentals could present some problems. So I would avoid that. And the condominium is a form of ownership. It's not a form of a use. So you probably should stick to things like size and use instead of ownership when you're, you know, trying to accomplish your goals.
So you can't even say it should be condo mapped.
You got to let the market dictate that. But it does sound like, to Alex's point, and I think probably to David's point too, like going back to the 17 units per acre or the 100% FAR is kind of where it kind of feels like it is, based on the meeting with the commission. I mean, that's something we could debate at the meeting next week if we wanted to, but that just seems like that's where it is. Now, it is kind of curious to say maybe we throw in there the size limitation on a hotel, if that's, I didn't know that was a possibility.
I believe we talked early on about a maximum of 125 rooms, because when you look at depending on what definition of boutique you look at, that was 100 to 125 was kind of the maximum there. But I, you know, the discussion was that the part of the A and the D properties that are under the Dimitri Holdings would be a good, a potentially good location for a hotel. And yeah. There's not many of those that you can say that in town. And they've stated early on, we haven't been shown any renderings, but they've stated that a hotel was a part of their wish list, I guess.
So am I hearing us say that going back to the 100% max FAR and 17 is kind of where we're drifting, or?
One question. Let me ask, and Bronce, would it make a difference if we stayed at 17 units an acre, but the FAR was at 125?
That's what was discussed at the meeting, that the commission would be more open to a higher FAR than they would be to more density.
That creates a little flexibility. And I'm just thinking, like with the I property, I mean, economically, financially, I think where this goes is if somebody were to build residential units there, I tend to think that they're going to be, whether it's condos or townhouses, I don't see an apartment complex going there. Yeah. I could see somebody buying two or three or four condos and renting them out, whether it was, to students or whatever, and using mm-hmm. them that way, maybe not as primary residences, but using them as investment properties, not specifically apartments. I mean, that's something that might make sense.
And then the Trevilian properties down here that are this A group here, to me, those, I thought those would be beautiful walk-up brownstones, whatever it may be. Yep. Your neighbors to the train, which isn't the best thing in the world, but right now they're off a mixture of office and kind of random buildings that are scabbed together that don't have any parking. So when they redevelop, that could be, you know, townhomes along Palmetto could be really beautiful.
Well, I played around today with the J properties. And once you start putting in the setbacks and oh boy, there's not a lot left there. And the 125, it would take some doing to get the 125 in there and everything else. So it's, as David has alluded to a couple of times, you know, the 125 is a real reach. And also, you know, they have to earn that.
Yes.
You know, they've got to go to that table and start working their way through, I'll do this, I'll do that, to slowly inch their way toward the 125.
Exactly.
I guess that's why I'm not worried about the 125 and I'm not worried about the 25 units an acre, because I think the setbacks to open space, the height limitations going to govern all of that. And I think it's kind of a non-issue, but I think people are focused on this. They're going to be focused on the fact that we are increasing the numbers. They're not going to see that the site is limited by setbacks and volume. And so they're going to focus on, I'm assuming they're going to focus on the fact that we're making it more dense. And so it could become, I mean, listen, watch us. Look at us. We keep on having the same discussion, you know. So we could be setting ourselves up for a lot of controversy or a lot of discussion on this subject.
And if the commission was, you know, somewhat amenable to a bit of a higher FAR, given that the parking garage had to be included and the 17 units per acre, there's an opportunity to let the market work and see
exactly
if it can work. And, you know, the folks that own those properties are going to get creative on what they can do to achieve what they want to. If they come back in a couple of years and tell the commission, we've tried everything and we just can't do it, then maybe that's a different conversation for a different day. But, you know, I think that the work that everyone has done does great things for the A properties, which was kind of the start of this, is to help the smaller properties. Having the park at Progress Point, obviously, as a neighboring property, is going to be fantastic. Having some parking to help out these small businesses that don't have the parking, and then to give the opportunity for the J property, because the J property kind of has to take care of all this area for the excess parking. It creates more opportunities for these smaller A properties to be able to grow, maybe to build a unit or two on top to keep that scale that's really important to us, in the two-story. And, you know, I think that this really is at a point where, after a lot of hard work, it's just about there. And of course, whatever suggestions you all make, and I'll tell you, sorry to ramble on, but what I will do is any changes we make today, I will attach to the memo that goes before you that basically just says discussion notes. Because they aren't red lines, because you haven't and cannot make any real decisions until you're in a public hearing and you've heard the public testimony. But as a tool to remember what discussions have taken place up to this point, that's how I will label that.
Good. That sounds like it gives us some room to
The only other area that if you don't mind, I'd like to bring up something that's been requested of us. Can you see the map there?
Yeah.
Okay. So there has been a request from an area that was in the overlay in the past, but then was removed in order to protect the single family homes. And
your map went away.
Oh, it did it?
Yeah.
Is it coming back?
Nope.
Okay, we're going to try that again. All right. Come on, Matt.
Nice list of documents, though.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Do you see it?
See the aerial.
Aerial?
Are you seeing it now?
Yep, an aerial. Okay.
So this block here, if you can see my mouse, it's behind the Jewett Clinic. This is Jewett here. This is Jewett owns this parking lot. This parking lot, I believe, goes with the condo units. Jewett owns this property, this property, this property. But we had two single family homes that were in there, and it was, well, maybe we should not encroach on any area that's single family homes. Well, we've come to find out that those are under common ownership by a doctor who wants to be in the overlay and has asked that for consideration to bring this area back in, which we're in favor of because it gives architectural control to, you know, if Jewett were to tear down and rebuild the parking lot, which is what they're doing, they're parking everybody there. And then they've even bought one of these restaurants over here, and they're parking there. But this is the request for this area.
Do you think they're going to try to vacate that road?
No. Okay. No, and I don't think this commission would be open to vacating any roads.
Okay.
So you're going to take, what is that on the north side? That development is going to now be in the OAO?
It's a newer development that it's not going to have any effect on. It's already been built. It's built to code. It would be within the allowable use, I guess, of what can be built there. So it really was to protect these two homes that we were under the impression were owner occupied. And then it turns out that they are not. And so I had a letter come to a commissioner saying, "Hey, I was in, what happened?" And I would like to be back in because I own these, and because this is parking or could be commercial.
Would that be added to the sub area E?
I think what we would likely do in this case is, let me get back to my.
And how are you sure that the residents in that northern piece of property aren't going to suddenly say, "I don't want to be in the OAO"?
Well, they've received a citywide notice twice before when they were in, and we never heard anything from any of those residents. So kind of judging it on that.
Okay.
And there would not be a net, would there be a net increase in density by bringing them into the overlay? It would just be an increase in
performance standards. Would probably extend A.
Gotcha. Oh, understood. So they're not really getting additional units or density necessarily. They're mostly getting increased standards. So I think it makes sense to
me. They just want to be in the overlay.
Okay.
Okay.
But they would be A properties, not E.
That would be my suggestion.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I hate to kick back to our density question again, but I have a question for Vishon. Do you think it's possible with a 25% open space requirement to hit 17 units an acre on a townhome product? I'm trying to think. I was looking at in downtown Winter Garden, where there's the Phil Keane project, and I hadn't thought of this until now. Phil Keane project near downtown, and none of those have 25% open space or anywhere close to it. And there, some of those are 15 an acre and stuff like that. So I'm just curious how that open space impacts. It's 2 acres and above, right, Bronz?
Right, right.
So yes. The I property would have to do 25% open space. It's interesting.
The I property
25% is really, really high. It's imagine it just J because it's a rectangle. It's easy to visualize. A quarter of it is going to be open space.
Which, so, you know, which, multiple millions of dollars. And but that was kind of the trade-off of we don't want to see parking lot dominated development. And
I guess usually you just trade that kind of stuff for a little bit of entity. So
yeah,
that's the kind of thing I'm struggling right, with, but right. That's okay.
That's again, curious. That's why I'm not worried about the density issue, because we've already, you know, the setbacks and the open space and the height right there, you're done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really all you need to think about, because those are the, and then of course, parking is a limitation always.
Mm-hmm.
So I think FAR and density personally is a non-issue.
I agree
as well.
But I don't think people understand that. I don't think, right. You know,
The public won't understand it, and no. If they see, when they see 25 units to the acre, they're going to blow up on that basis.
You have to show them a picture, an accurate picture, and I don't think we really have an accurate picture, because those architectural studies that were done were great, but they're not specific enough to this particular situation.
Yeah, and they're not programmed.
Right. And then the woman who brought up the letter we got yesterday, you know, people keep on talking about the wellness center, but that's, you know, what's the parking ratio of the wellness center?
It's a very different type of use.
Exactly. And it
also was free land. So that.
Yeah. So it's not.
That changes.
It's not a good analog. You're not comparing apples to apples. You're comparing apples to oranges. So
I don't think I saw that. There was a letter from somebody.
Yeah.
It was sent to everybody yesterday. It was supposed to be.
Yeah.
I received it.
All right, well, if it makes you feel any better, I think I got left out too.
So I'm hearing us say that we would leave the 125 max FAR.
But back to Alex's point.
Pardon me, you know, Fashan, I'm having a hard time hearing you.
Oh, sorry. Let me see if I can raise my volume. Back to Alex's point, he's saying, you know, if we can't even get 17 with the open space, maybe it's not even, why try to increase, I think what you're saying, Alex, is why try to increase the density?
Right.
If we can't even get it.
I think it's a moot point. I think you're gonna,
right.
I think if you get 15 units an acre on I with your open space requirement, I'll be shocked.
Yeah.
Because you're gonna smash it. It's gonna be three-story towns or three-story condo or whatever.
Well, I is a different animal because it's a
it's triangle. Not a square. Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, let's just say
is as efficient as you can be being a rectangle.
And you're still probably 15 units in acre. I mean, you put a rectangle, then, you know, you put townhomes on Fairbanks, which is not particularly desirable to me. I'm just saying if it was a residential thing, you know, whatever.
Right. Well, the other thing with
it'd be tough thing
too with Jay is if you apply the block structure to it, you've just about got to divide that in half to get down to the perimeter size that we specify in the zoning code, because it's too big a perimeter. It has, according to the block structure rules, it's got to be a big chunk of ground through the middle of it opened up.
which I would assume would run east to west, since you don't want to cut onto Fairbanks. So, yeah, I guess all in all, I mean, I don't think the density is an issue because you can't even get there.
That's what I'm hearing is let's leave it at 17.
Yeah, the difference between if you had D, I, and J at 17 units an acre, it would be a total of 182 units. And if you had the same at 25, you'd be at 266 units total split between the properties, which sounds like a lot.
25 units of property.
Yeah, it's not.
I think it's just more the, like Vashon said, it's more the optics, seeing the word 17 versus 25. And without a good graphic, people aren't going to understand it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just thought D is such a perfect opportunity for a multifamily, you know, product. J, like, I'm okay with townhomes on J just because I think, you know, that scale works there, but I could easily see, I mean, it's not like I have any skin in the game, but I just thought D would be a good opportunity to have a little bit more density and take advantage of the height. And we're never going to get there with 17 units an acre.
With
1792. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say with 1792, which is a high throughput train tracks and so forth, and residential kind of gets. Townhomes just become less desirable. So I kind of understand where Vashon's coming from. Once you get to that setting, really the only way to do it is a condo slash apartment. So
what about, just an idea, we do have code that allows for live work units where you actually have, you have a unit, but you have a part of it that is separated specifically as an office portion, and you have to keep it as an office portion and then, you know, plat it, develop it that way. Would the rents from your experience from those make 17 units per acre a little more, because I don't think anybody's going to build straight office right now. I just can't really see that with so much vacancy, but live work is becoming pretty popular, and a lot of people like to have the part of their home that is designated as office space, especially for taxes. Is that a way that we could still have some folks living down here, working down here, you know, the live, work, play? And would the rents in your experience be high enough to make it work, I guess?
I think 17 units, I mean, general 17 units an acre is okay. It's fine. It's just a matter of kind of Vashon's point is there are a few locations in here where I could understand from a design standpoint that an apartment is more fitting given the surrounding experience of being, you know, a resident. But I think, you know, based on the code requirements of what's desired, it makes that relatively moot, you know, not possible to achieve in one way or the other. So live work, you know, I guess it's just a, you know, it's just a matter of what someone's willing to build. The only one that I think would be a successful model for this location that somebody might do is the Baldwin Park ones that are an accessory dwelling unit, a townhome, and an office. But I don't know how you guys count accessory dwelling units for density if those are waived, but that's the only one that I've seen in a high income area that are.
We had a project come through a couple of years ago that was at the almost to Howell Branch Road, on just kind of at the northern city limits extension where you go into the city. Operations yard there. There's a vacant property on the east side of the road there where they were basically live work townhomes where the bottom floor You had basically was going to be the office. You had walk in, you had to make it ADA accessible, and that counted as your office, but it couldn't exceed a certain percentage of the rest and fit within, gosh, I can't remember if it was R2 or R3 zoning, but regardless, it wouldn't exceed 17 units per acre. So that's maybe that being an option here, because I mean, it is a mixed use product, could help 17 be doable.
I think either way, yeah, 17 is doable. And I think the board's comfortable with that number for now. I think there's a way you could do beyond that, but I think the educational push, and it would just be lot specific. So I don't know if it's something we need to address. And a huge overlay that addresses, you know, 100 or whatever, how many acres this is. I think it's somebody that's going to have to, if they want to do an apartment, they're going to have to come back.
So am I hearing 125% FAR and back to 17 units per acre for DI and J? Okay.
Just out of curiosity, while we're to this point, and maybe Bronx or Chairman James, kind of how do we see this playing out in the public meeting? Like, how will we, I guess, do we expect a big crowd, or do you have a sense for that, number one? And number two, how do we use what we've been workshopping to work from to make a recommendation?
We're going to say this has just been kind of a working notes document is what I'm calling this. You can't make any decisions before you get to a meeting, and it's okay to have conversations like this and kind of use this as your notes for making any recommendations, because you will need to, what you are making a decision on is the clean version from, I believe it's August 2nd, that is the one that is on the page. So any deviation from that, you will need to put into a motion. And so if anybody is headed this way, you can use this as a tool for making a motion or for keeping notes or saying, yeah, we discussed this, and after hearing public testimony, we feel that this is appropriate. So this is just your kind of scratch pad of things you've talked about up to this point, I guess is the best way I would put it.
I agree.
Are you real quick? I know you're in there changing stuff. I have it in my notes here that there was at least a few folks that were in agreement at our last joint work session that increasing the density bonus. I wasn't sure if that applied to units per acre or just FAR. I don't know if we got to that.
You know what?
But the 10% number
You're talking about for workforce, or?
Yeah, we kind of did the math on the 10%.
Right. Yeah. And Commissioner Weaver thought we might ought to up that to something, because 10% was nothing.
Yeah. Well, especially given what we just decided.
Yeah,
it's not a great incentive.
Yeah, the typical workforce is 80% of the area median income. So you need at least, you know, a little more than 20% or 20% increase at least, just because your per unit rent is reduced by about 20%. So to meet that requirement, so you need, you know, something more in the tune of that. So I don't know if we want to make a recommendation for something more like 20%. Which essentially gets you 3 extra units an acre. I think the FAR increase is irrelevant now that we're recommending
120. Yeah, I don't think that's what we meant it to say. I think it was up to a 10% per acre increase. not far. We were just trying to take out all those other words because they're back in the zoning code, but it's a 10% gotcha. Acre, and maybe 20% would make more sense now, given that we're back to 17 units per acre. 10% of 17 ain't much.
So would you say a 10%?
20%.
Or I'm sorry.
20% per acre?
Residential. Yeah, 20% increase.
Residential density increase?
Residential density, correct, yeah.
Is that what the board is thinking?
Yeah, that sounds good. I always get not nervous, but I kind of wonder when things say may be allowed. Who is the deciding party? Who reviews this? Is it the commission? You know, so. Like a planner.
Shall.
I would recommend shall be permitted. And I mean, you could set it at 80% of a area median income, or you could make some sort of reviewing body.
We have a definition for workforce housing where we use the Orange County definition. Yeah.
Yes, do that, reference that. Something's definable. Yes,
we do.
Mm-hmm. If you wanted to go to a body, maybe P&Z, but I think it should go to...
What is that definition? I'm just wondering, you know, with all the talk about the kind of product that Winter Park wants to see and how we don't want high density or high apartments. I mean,
it's 120. Let me make sure I get this right. It's actually, I've got it. I'm going to cheat and use this document.
It's 120%
of the median household income and 120% of the median rental price, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
That's a workforce?
I just wonder what kind of workforce we're talking about in Winter Park. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, are we talking about, like, you know, high-end attorneys as workforce, or, you know, and doctors as workforce, or are we talking workforce? Because I just don't see it. No.
I
agree with you.
Police, firefighters, you know,
that would be great if it was real, if it was possible and real. And I would love to see that. I would love to see that diversity, and I would love to see those income brackets be able to afford property in Winter Park. I would push for that, but I sort of don't see it.
I see your point.
Yeah.
And,
I think that's why we got to at least make the
workforce is a nice concept. It's a feel good concept. That every time I hear, you know, residents or the city commissioners talk about it, they don't seem to really want it, which is a shame. That's all I'll say.
I've heard the city commission on a number of occasions have a push for workforce housing, and have recently even increased the housing fee that went away for a while, which when a building permit comes in, ensures that a portion of the kind of an additional housing linkage fee comes in that goes towards potential workforce or low income properties. A lot of times those have been lots for Habitat for Humanity and I think the Hannibal Square Land Trust has benefited from that in the past. So, and then the linkage fee went away, but it's back now. So I think you've got a commission that's dedicated to it.
Bronce, are you going to make that change that you just made in subarea J? You're going to do that in D and I as well?
Absolutely. If you are comfortable with that, I wanted to look at one more thing from the zoning code to make sure. Sorry, if you'll just give me a moment here. So the, as you can see before, the it talked about it didn't count towards the floor area ratio. Basically to allow.
Is that what's in the zoning?
Maximum density. Sorry. Yes, it is maximum density. I was saying if it was density plus the FAR did not count, but I don't believe that is correct.
No, I don't see it.
Thought we had that conversation, but I'm not seeing it, so I don't believe I'm correct on that. Okay. If you are comfortable with that language, I will make the changes for you.
You're getting really good at this. We don't even miss Allison anymore.
No, she's just here to blame mistakes on, pretty much.
Yeah, of course. Understood. I have another question, as long as we've got the map. And this is the subarea C progress point thing. If the commission has decided to really make a park there, mm-hmm. do we want to divide that and say, okay, there's remaining ground?
Yeah,
could so be the, built on?
Very, very good question. So what we will do as a part of this process is, what we would do as a part of this process is this area kind of the tip of the spear, if you will. We'll have an underlying zoning of park, so that it is indeed parkland. This is what the commission asked staff to do, and then there will be parking lot on the backside. Which we don't really need to change that. It's more that getting the credit for the actual parkland itself was, as I understood, what the commission wanted to make sure the underlying zoning showed it as parkland. So because we've done citywide notice, we can write into the ordinance that area that's been determined that will be park, will indeed be parkland.
So if we're calculating a FAR, will it not include the parkland?
Parks actually within the city have their own floor area ratio, just because sometimes there are, say that somebody wanted to build a pavilion or a stage or basically anything that's got a cover on it counts towards floor area ratio. And I think the commission may want to change the FAR for the park area, though we have a separate FAR for the other area that could eventually have a parking structure. Right now, I don't believe it is the intent of the commission to have a parking structure. It's to maximize the amount of surface parking space to make sure we make everybody whole and hopefully create opportunities for a little bit of growth and expansion. But good question.
Yeah, because I suspect that's another area that we're going to get a lot of citizen input. even though, you know, making it has become what it has become. I just was trying to think of a way to present that such that we could minimize minimize the screaming and shouting about Progress Point.
I mean, at this point, the commission has made the decision not to go forward with any sort of RFP and right. to keep it as parkland and parking. And okay. We've got some other changes they've asked for us to make. We're moving Palmetto to join up. We have a bike path that's going to be joining up. It's got great deal of landscaping. We're bringing in some very, very large live oak trees of a caliper I didn't know you could actually plant. So it's not the park where you plant a 3-inch caliper live oak and in 20 years they're, you know, well, maybe 10-inch. I think the discussion was 20-inch caliper live oaks, which will allow you to kind of create a canopy right off the bat and then incorporate some of the park design elements, like this area along Orange Ave would be a seating wall that has a trellis over the top, sort of a brick double seating wall on both sides that has a trellis with some sort of viney flower that provides shade and cover, because we also have a Lynx bus stop right here. So it creates a much better situation for our transit users. And then from the park side, it provides kind of definition to the edge of the park. And if you've got kids, there's a wall there to stop them from running towards Orange Avenue. And then there's some other elements they've asked to be included that staff and the designer are working on, but
will all of that be, any of that be in the comp plan change? Amendment? Or in zoning?
Only the zoning, it's of the underlying zoning of area C, where we define basically that it the underlying zoning would be parkland, and we can just say that 1.5 acres of this will be defined as parkland. I've got to work with our city attorneys on the exact language we need to do to accomplish that. But the problem is I can't get a legal description right now because Palmetto is going to be moving and we don't have a survey that gives us the exact legal for that area after Palmetto moves. So it may be a bit of a rudimentary map that says this portion shall be this 1.5 acres shall be.
So we there'll be no change to the language in the comp plan amendment.
I may bring a minor change to the comp plan text, but I'll make sure to point that out if it's different from what is being proposed. Anything that staff brings, you know, where we find a Scrivener's error or anything from the city attorney, we'll mark up and show. Put in the packet and show to make sure the public is able to see that.
Okay. So, any more comp plan discussions on any of the, I think we've pretty much nailed down the sub areas, or it sounds like to me.
Mm-hmm. I think. So, so there was some discussion on the open space.
Yeah, that last sentence,
I believe,
needs to be kept, I think.
The last sentence?
Yeah. When we were hacking and chopping.
Okay.
That fits in with the rest of the words we kept.
Any discussion on the parallel orange palmetto? The parallel drive, Orange Avenue access?
Nope.
Mm-hmm. Contribution to transportation and mobility infrastructure. We put in there, we took all the things that would require payment into something. This says, in the event the city establishes a mobility fee, road impact fee, special assessment, or other funding mechanism.
The only thing I remember from this is just the starting sentence that says, the city intends to establish a mobility fee instead of in the event. So something along the lines of setting a policy that there's a desire to, and there's a policy set forth to endeavor to set a, you know, mobility fee, and then in the event. So some kind of just very quick and dirty policy that, you know, it's more of a, hey, we want to establish this, and if we do, that'd be a requirement of these developments.
What about in the title, contribution to the city?
It's almost like go ahead.
Mobility, the city's intended creation of a transportation and mobility fee.
Intent to create, a transportation mobility fee. I would just delete contribution to, right?
Yeah. City
of our intent to create a transportation mobility fee.
Okay. Oh, because it covers it in down below.
All righty.
Appearance review is covered in the code, but it's up to you on whether or not it is your intent to keep it.
Well, I heard one of the commissioners was concerned that that's a new comp plan kind of deal. It's not anywhere else in the comp plan to have appearance reviews. And I don't know whether that implies, you know, we should keep it as a policy or establish it rather as a policy.
Want the city attorney to possibly weigh in? Because sure. I don't know if I have much advice for you. Mr. Lang, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Sorry,
I missed the question, though. What is it on this appearance review? Well, I mean, that's one of those things that was discussed as something new, and there was a desire by at least one of the commissioners to have it in the comp plan because it's new. It could also, and I think it is in the zoning code draft.
It is.
But I think what I heard was there was a desire by the commission to have it in there. So is the question whether it needs to be there? From a legal standpoint, it doesn't have to be in the comp plan.
Okay.
That may have been more the...
That was the question. Does anybody on the board, anybody else on the board feel like we should put that back in? Or just let the zoning code that explains it, I think, in more detail stand?
I guess in my mind, it would be typically you'd see a policy with the intent to establish a architectural review entity would be typically how you see it, because I don't think there is one today. I don't think there's a city architect or anybody right. that does this. So that's, if we want to bring it back in, which I could go either way, I don't think we're going to lose anything majorly or gain anything too major by having it in here. I think if there's the intent, I mean, is it reasonable to assume you guys are going to do that, Bronze? Is that a, is that something
it is, coming up? It's in the, yes, it is going to happen. I think I can safely say it will be happening. We've got it defined in the zoning code where we define the number of people and the types of experts that would make up the architectural review committee.
The commission already adopted an ordinance to create
That's right.
Board in its board's ordinance. So they're anticipating as soon as the OAO is adopted that they can start making appointments. And the zoning code would need to put a little more meat on the bones as far as what the land development regulations that implement this appearance review would be. But I think there is a way to make in this policy if you keep it a little more straightforward.
Yeah,
that's what I suggest. Just very simple of is the intent of the city to establish an appearance review board or whatever it is that it's called, implementing the policy or the code of the OAO. Because it's not really, that appearance review is not going to implement the policies. They're going to just hard and fast regulate architecture.
They just make a recommendation to me, but I bring their recommendation with all the backup materials for the larger projects to yourselves and to the commission, but they're just an advisory board of here's how we feel things can be improved. I'm sure there'll be a little negotiation before if there's some major issues before it gets to P&Z or the commission. Yeah, we do, since we have the, since it already exists and the commission's already voted to create it and we've got the standards and the land development code, I guess it's just up to you if you want it in there. Staff is neutral.
Well, we've already got it out, and it seems like it's covered in other places, so.
I would leave it out.
Sounds good. I agree.
Yeah.
Okay. Public hearings for conditional uses. I believe we made the corrections that were intended.
I'm actually still confused by the last sentence and the purpose of it.
I don't understand that.
I think the... It was a comment by one of the commissioners, and I think the purpose was to only apply that threshold to the requirement to have two public hearings, not the citywide notice. So the way it currently reads it, it makes it sound like all construction projects between 10,000 square feet and 35,000 square foot would require the two public hearings for the commission, the one for the LPA, and then citywide notice. I don't think the intent was to require citywide notice for those type of projects, but I could be wrong. If it is intended to mean that the entire policy applies, then we probably should just add it to as a subsection 4 to the above sentence.
Yeah, I agree. And there was some mention of adaptive reuse, but that's kind of covered in your grandfathered clause or the equipment of, right? There's a threshold of square footage and so forth that's covered in the CUP, right? Because I remember the discussion was adaptive reuse. So yeah, I agree. I think you just add, make a subsection four and new construction projects between 10 and 35.
I don't think the intent was to apply citywide notice to this, right. But you know, we probably ought to ask the commissioner that asked for this what the intent was.
Yeah, I agree that I don't think they wanted the citywide notice. I thought I wrote that down somewhere, but who the hell knows? My desk is uglier than Bronx's.
I have in my notes no citywide notice under 35,000.
Yeah, and then I think there was a discussion on new construction versus remodel as well. Not wanting to, somebody's remodeling, but not changing the use, that would trigger a conditional use, not making them go through the whole citywide notice process.
Right.
I will get clarification on that. And but you are. So you said let's make a four. Is that correct?
Well, I this is Dan. I would think instead of making a four, that probably should be rewritten and say prior to approval for new construction projects between 10,000 square feet and 35,000 square feet, there shall be at least two public hearings conducted before the city commission.
Gotcha. But they go through the standard
notice.
1,500 foot notice for a conditional use.
Right.
Okay. Do you want to take a stab at that and Dan and give it back to me and I'll make that change in the
sure.
version that I present to P&Z?
Yeah, we can get now for delete. This policy shall only apply and put the word for new construction projects between. Let's delete the first. This policy shall apply. Also, just delete those words.
And four will start the new sentence, right?
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Square feet, their standard
notice requirements.
Zoning conditional use notice shall apply.
Well, I'm not sure you need to say that, but you can. I think the point on that is there shall be at least two public hearings before the commission conducted before approving. A conditional use, but we can work on the language, but I think that was the intent.
To
because if you look at subsection two, it requires everything over 35,000 square feet to have a citywide notice. So why would you then have citywide notice for something smaller than that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. We can fix it later, but yeah, you're on the right track.
Public hearings. Let's just finish strong here. Okay. All right. Everybody okay with that?
More or less.
I think it would be new construction projects between 10,000 square feet and 35,000 square feet requiring conditional use approval. More or less, I think that.
Should we say anything about just to make sure that this shall not trigger citywide notice?
Sure.
Okay. I'm just going to say... standard note, public notice. Public notice requirement.
You might be better off without saying that, because that then that sentence may be interpreted to apply to the entire policy. I just leave it out. Maybe there's a way of modifying that sentence to make that clear, but we can do that later, Bronze. Probably should move on.
How about this? How about that one?
Okay.
All right.
Okay. OCD Bronze.
I didn't want to forget about that and come back.
No, we got to get it right.
Are we okay with block structure?
Sure.
Comments? And I don't think there was any discussion on removing far from the parking structures. I have a question. If
I don't care for it, but I'm not gonna.
If you are trying,
I'm not gonna be the black sheep right now. It is so like, this is the only jurisdiction that I've ever worked in that does this. Especially since I don't know where that came from. I mean, I know it was in the code originally, but now we're back down to, you know, we didn't increase our FAR, so.
So I have a question that may make the workforce housing a little more of a possibility. And this is just an idea that I would love to see that. What about the parking required for the workforce housing units shall not apply towards the FAR?
That's a good idea.
Do you think that Alex and others who've worked in the financing side, would that make a difference if, you know, that doesn't apply towards the FAR, because then it's expensive to build and you're getting less income.
Sorry, I was trying to see if I found any kind of, like LaShawn said, anywhere else that had this kind of FAR parking garage.
No.
they apply this on Park Avenue? Is that applied on Park Avenue downtown?
It's already in the comp plan.
So the time, there are a number of places that this did not apply to. So the Hannibal Square garage, that's 6.5 stories, did not apply.
I didn't know that.
SunTrust, the Bank of America, it used to not be in there, and then it used to say the commission can remove that requirement, and then it became a requirement that for all parking garages have to be count towards the FAR, which makes it difficult.
And then what was your proposal, Bronx, for?
I was wondering if we say that the parking required for the workforce housing would not apply towards the parking garage FAR.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. It's just still come across the max density cap, but
if it gives you a little more leasable space for other uses to kind of make up that gap, would it?
It adds some flexibility.
Yeah, I think it will help.
Okay. Not trying to add, I'm just trying to make the workforce a reality, I guess.
So was there, I guess, regarding the history of keeping this in, was there over the past year and a half or so, has it been a discussion item?
This was out on the...
Oh, that's right.
It was out. Version.
Right. And then the commission wanted it back in?
It was put back in, and then there was... tried to make some other incentives of the extra that you're required to build shall not count towards your FAR. Of course, anything on the top open level and anything
right below
low grade shall not apply, but this is kind of where we're at.
Right.
You think that covers what you were thinking?
Any parking required for workforce that shall not apply towards the only thing I would say is maybe something along the lines of, if I'm understanding the intent, for all units meeting the workforce housing criteria.
Okay.
Required parking shall not apply towards the FAR.
Makes sense.
Think
something like that.
Should I be exempt from FAR maybe?
Shall not be calculated
from counting towards the FAR.
Yeah, shall be exempt from. I would just or shall not be calculated towards max FAR or something. That's fine. Either way,
okay.
as long as Dan's good with it, I'm good with it. As long as it reads proper.
We'll get one more city attorney scrub before we.
There you go.
Before we go. All right, and can't remember if we're good with block structure, kind of keeping it a little simpler.
So does that mean a road or a pedestrian way or either or?
Fine, that's actually.
Continuous driveway or alley. Is what the zoning code kind of says now.
Is that intended to be a dedicated?
I think we'd be in after requiring 25% open space if we require dedication of right of way.
They just have to show circulation.
Yeah, it's intended basically
okay
to not have to see the back of house.
Yeah.
That's fine. But yeah, I kind of see what Bashan's saying.
It's trying to break things up to look like Park Avenue, but keep it on that scale so that you can't have a building front beyond 300 feet wide.
Right.
Which I think you can, the intent is you can do that with architecture, with breezeways, with different things like that, that are popular on Park Avenue, that, you know, the secret garden type of things.
But again, you're giving up a property owner's land for a lot of for usage that they're not going to be able to earn any revenue on.
Well, hopefully it creates more value, right?
Right.
That's the hope.
Does it count toward the green space?
Should.
I assume if it's pedestrian oriented, I assume it would.
Yeah. Right. I would agree, because otherwise you really start nickel and diming things to the point where it's not 25%, it's more like 40%. Yeah. All right. So comfortable with this?
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. Well, members of the board. I believe we have completed the comprehensive plan. Going to make a note about adding that area back in. All right.
So again, Bronze, we will have this red line as our notes.
Yes, this is.
Will the public see them?
Yes, they will be distributed in the packet. The first thing that comes out will be the ordinance itself, the clean version of the ordinance. And then also I'll probably have the clean version of the zoning code, even though action won't be taken on that. And then I'll have your notes and then any other backup materials that we need to have in there.
Do we have any feel for how many people, or if people, or are we encouraging them to be online, or how's that work?
I would strongly encourage people to be a part of this, but I would strongly encourage them to utilize online means, because with mask and distancing requirements, the commission chambers is going to be pretty tight on the ability for a lot of people to be in there. We did this before, where we tried to stage people in different rooms and make sure everybody had a chance to speak, and there not everybody did. This was a commission meeting. There was a few less at PNZ, but there were people still at the end who were upset that they weren't able to speak. We tried to get everybody, but we had people spread outside and in different rooms, and trying to keep the crowd small and separated, and obviously masks will be required. And but we have a great tool with the online, the ability to speak online.
All righty. Well, does anybody have anything else that's good for the board?
I just have a quick question. I'm assuming for any of the language we put in, Dan, that you would tell us if you think that it is ripe for lawsuits or litigation or anything like that.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. I'm going to go through this after this workshop in between now and your meeting to consider the language. But I'm not aware of anything at this point that we've been talking about that would be problematic.
Thank you.
All righty. So, Bronce, we're not at a position yet to discuss the new guidelines.
Yeah, we certainly can. If we can go through those real quick.
I'm going to take a 2-minute break while
you're. I was going to say, can we take a 5-minute?
Take a 5? Sure.
Yeah. A 5.
All right. All right.
Oh, I like your background.
Oh, there we go. I'm going celestial on you. I could get really bad and just switch it every 5 minutes, but
they ought to have backgrounds that move.
Oh, so God.
It look like you're
give people vertigo.
There you go. The world is turning behind you.
Well, that was a good job, Dick. We've finally got through the comp plan, so that's an accomplishment.
I don't know how we're going to get through the zoning. So many more pages.
Well,
and it's kind of I'm really struggling with things that are said here, and then something said five pages later that you go,
oh, it's
in conflict.
Yeah, it's confusing. It's going to be very,
very cobbled together.
Yes, absolutely. I agree with you.
You know, it's
it's going to be a challenge. It will be a challenge.
We may have to have again two or three sessions in September.
Yeah,
work sessions just to get, if we really honestly think we're going to be able to talk about it at our October meeting.
Yeah, and it may be that we have to figure out a way to structure it so that we're going through it, focusing on certain sections, or only going, you know, if something is repeated, that it gets changed across the board. It's going to be difficult to go through page by page.
No, I agree. I think that the big thing would be to jump to the all the sub areas.
Yeah,
far more words and say, yeah. Now does this all
match and work? Said, yes,
the comp plan.
I agree with you.
And then go back and try to attack all this, you know, open space and
and maybe what we do is we ask the other P&Z members to go through the document and to simply highlight those areas that they have questions, rather than trying to go through it line by line, to simply say, you know, section one, are there comments? Section two, and if there aren't, we move on.
Yep, I agree.
But some way to streamline the process, or we'll never get through. I mean, even if you just look at what we did with the comp plan, we went back and forth, like, you know, until we finally arrived at some consensus.
Yep.
All right.
Well, we've solved that problem.
Genius.
Good job, guys. You did it. Maybe I'll step away more often.
Well, we didn't want to talk about how you're such a problem, Alex. So
I heard people saying something when I put my headphone on and hush and act like we were talking about work. I don't know.
Doesn't help to pray, Melissa. It's too late for that.
We're in this thing for the long haul.
I know. I'm just, it's either that or I'm just rubbing my head.
Oh. Equivalent.
Bronce, you may have to post your draft of the guidelines.
Yeah, I can certainly do that. Fine. Email and okay. All right, I'm going to share. Yes. Can you see it?
Yep.
All right.
The main.
Let me get the view correct here. One page. Page width. How's that for you?
Yeah. Can you scroll down to number 6?
Certainly can.
Most of this. It's just the way we do things. 6 is a new thing, which is that we're going to only allow the applicant and their entire team 15 minutes to present.
I thought that was what came out of the discussion.
Right.
Oh, and okay.
That's sort of our baseline. That's... obviously, all of this can be changed at the meeting. We can agree as a board to say, you know, let's ask them how much they need. Do they need 15? 15's fine. Go with it. Then, of course, the next thing that's big is number 10, which says, okay.
Then it says, yes, after their presentation, you can ask questions, doesn't count towards public comment, any member of the public, 3 minutes, Q&A should not occur.
Well, this is the one that I think we need to discuss, which is if the public has a representative, if 4 or more property owners can group, if you will, with a representative, and then the representative has 10 minutes to speak for the group.
And the group would be?
It seems like if each individual, if each member of the public can speak for 3 minutes and 4 of them are grouping, that their rep ought to get 12.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I'm just being simple. And then it's per group, which says, okay, if you have 10 groups of 4 people out there and they all want the same rep, somebody could be up there talking all night.
And that's where I think the 10 minutes came in, because you can have larger groups who may be 10 homes and they're likely all going to have the same concerns. And so it's just up to the board of how long
individual
go.
You know, our baseline is the applicant gets 15 minutes, their team. That's our baseline, unless we decide different. The public, if they have legal representation or professional representation, gets 10. Assuming they have at least 4 property members, owners rather, that want to group behind that representative. To me, that's the new thing that the board, we need to decide, does that sound reasonable? And again, we can decide at a meeting prior to, as we start the meeting, well, this looks like it's going to be a real kerfuffle. Let's change our times a little bit. So that's why I'm calling these our baselines. Anybody have any opinions?
Why wouldn't we just, instead of going to doing the 12 minutes for 4 people, why don't we give them a little bit of a bonus and say if it's 3 people, a group of three people could cede it to one representative for 10 minutes. That adds a minute. It encourages that. We still have the right to keep them from repeating themselves, but it might simplify the process.
I think the question is, if you keep adding group members, do you keep adding three members per person to where you've now given
an attorney 30 minutes to speak?
Yeah.
No, please.
We have a max.
I mean, just knee-jerk reaction, I think it would be reasonable to have some kind of cap so that it's the general policy of the board that 15 minutes from each side total is generally what we're trying to get to. It's 50-50. They can't say they got less time or more time. And I would say that's regardless of group size or any of that. And special consideration could be made if there was 100 people that showed up.
So should we say at least five, so it adds up to the 3 minutes each, and then anything beyond, you're kind of giving up your time? Because we're doing the same thing to the applicant as well, because we've all seen the attorney comes up, then the property owner, then the engineer, then the architect. Try to make it fair for both sides.
And if I may, I think for, you know, limited situations where it's like one property and then maybe you just have the neighbors surrounding that are speaking, but when you're talking about a much bigger issue, I don't think we can just give everybody 15 minutes per side, especially if there's different people from different areas opposing this. You can't just give all of those people 15 minutes because they're not going to be grouped together. Well, yeah. They need to have their say.
Well, individuals would still have 3 minutes. They could still.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And I agree with you that if it's a biggie, prior to the meeting, we can agree as a board, here's how we will allocate time. Because we have had meetings that just drag on forever where, you know, we have person after person comes up and for 3 minutes talks the exact same thing. And
we've had a group who had somebody come up and speak for them, and then both the spouses spoke as well. And yeah. It's kind of your property counts as one speaker, I guess.
One speaker, yeah.
And I guess the intent that I'm thinking is I think it's more productive to get through the one-sided presentations and get to the question A, the Q&A, where we can bring up owners and residents and ask for clarification questions and ask for the representatives, and all that kind of stuff, as opposed to just getting barraged by, you know, 25 people saying the same thing and just having to run to that.
Yeah, we will try to control that, but we don't tend to Q&A the public. We just let them spew. And most of our Q&A goes toward the applicant. And of course, that's why I think we should view this as sort of, this would be our baseline of times, but we very flexible. We can decide prior to the top to the next agenda item how we want to allocate our time. And then item 13 there says after the public, then we're only going to allow the applicant 5 minutes to rebut. Does anybody see any problem with that?
We typically have in these larger cases where you have a land use attorney, they ask for the opportunity to come up and give a rebuttal. And so we've seen those go a little long and want to rehash the,
yeah, the
presentation and all that. And it's just usually they say, you know, that's not factual. Here's the actual case. It's not five stories, it's four stories, whatever it may be. But I've, in my experience, I think 5 minutes is more than.
I think that's fair. And then, of course, some people reserve the rest of their time for the end, and they'll do less than 15 minutes up front than they could do. That's still on the table, right? Someone does a 5-minute presentation at the beginning and reserves their time for a rebuttal.
If the board, if the board allows it, certainly.
I'm not, I don't know. I was just asking. I'm not.
It really is. It's up to you all of if, but somebody has to make the request and get the okay. It can't just be assumed. If anybody wants to deviate from these kind of general guidelines, they would need to state that.
If we could go back, I mean, I think the question, the issue is really limiting special representatives, because we get into these situations where an attorney will want to speak for a half hour and ramble on and both sort of politicize and make big points. But maybe the issue, and I worry about us having staff having to keep track of different groups. This group of four people are allocated to this architect, and this group of four people are allocated to this attorney. I wonder if we just want to say that in special situations, any group rep, you know, there can be no more than three group representatives who can each have 15 minutes, and just leave it at that, because we don't want to take away the right of the public to have their 3 minutes to speak anyway. And then if somebody is repeating what somebody else said, it's up to our esteemed chair to say, thank you very much. You're repeating what was just said. If you have something new to add, please do so. So, I mean, I would look at it as limiting those special representatives and just doing it on that basis.
It's rare to see more than one group representative, I guess you would say, because people tend to kind of.
Well, the Henderson Hotel. There was presentations by attorneys, civil engineers, owners, reps. I mean, there was.
Yeah, there was. I kind of lost track of that one.
in a truly big project, that happens. I think could happen pretty easily.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
I mean, I might look at it and say, let's allow any issue, three special representatives, 15 minutes apiece, and citizens.
I think that's very fair.
Yeah, I think if they know ahead of time.
Yeah, we ask them
the rule, then, and we enforce it.
Mm-hmm.
Then, you know, that'll become the standard. You know, don't get up there with 37 slides. You know, you don't have enough time to present 37 slides. And so David, what you're saying is a maximum of three
special representatives, group representatives.
And
I was just throwing that out. I was just throwing that out as an idea.
I think we run into trouble if we give certain privileges to some and not to others. That would be my concern for the public. The public comment.
You're saying three group representatives per
total.
Yeah, because I mean, you just said the Henderson had, you know. Yeah. Sounds like five different, so.
Yeah. Mr. Langley, I think, may have some clarification.
Okay.
What if, this is Dan, what if we did something like if you had a group of three or more, the group representative would get 10 minutes, but if you have a group that's even larger, let's say a group of 10 or more, you can have up to 15 minutes for your group representative. Make it sort of a sliding scale, the a larger group would get the bonus time equivalent to the applicant.
I guess I'm looking at it a little bit differently. I'm looking at it as sort of the hired hands in these situations. The professionals who are giving testimony versus individuals. I also get concerned about how you keep track. Are you going to have people hand in 10 little pieces of paper that say all these people have ceded their time to this speaker? And if staff is willing to do that, then fine.
Yeah, I mean, it's really the only way to do it. And quite honestly, then we have to kind of map those out.
Yeah. I mean, what's going to happen with the Orange Avenue overlay? We're going to have, can't even imagine how many groups are going to be represented there. You know, it could be each of the major property owners plus individuals.
We could have Dimitri, we could have Holler, we could have...
Exactly. Yeah. All their attorneys, and I mean, it's going to be...
Well, the thing is, they're not the applicant.
Yeah. They're just the public.
They'd each have 3 minutes?
They would have 3 minutes. I wouldn't be surprised if they say, as the major property owners, we would request some additional time, and that would be up to the board to say that makes sense. Or
they own all these properties in different entities, they can easily trigger the yep. threshold of four or five property owners if they have multiple entities.
Yeah, the
each owns enough to trigger the 15 minutes.
I think it's Orange Avenue is kind of a unique case. I think I see where we really do have an applicant for a major project and like the Henderson. That may require that these rules lean more that direction when you have something where the Orange mm-hmm. Avenue and you've got just a lot of public speakers. We may need another set of time.
Yeah. I mean, on for Orange Avenue, staff is not going to go through the whole thing. It's been a very public process, and I'm not going to read every line of the code and every single change. I'll hit on some the intent, the goals, who it's supposed to help and how, and try to keep it very short and simple. And there'll be plenty of public comment. So,
getting back to David's point, if there's a professional representative comes up, I'm here to speak for property owner A here. Could we then say, could you identify the people that are here at the meeting?
Yeah.
That you're representing, and we get their names, and then say, do you recognize that if you speak for them, we're not going to accept public input or additional input from each individual that you just identified?
Mm-hmm.
Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
That way we hear them, we get their names read into the record. And then we start the clock for the rep at whatever time limits we've decided. And if one of those people gets up, we say, I'm sorry, but Mr. So-and-so or Mrs. So-and-so spoke for you.
Mm-hmm.
And there'll be some ruffled feathers, but maybe after a while, people will realize we're just trying not to be there till 1 a.m.
Well, I think if we make it clear that by having a representative speak for you, you are ceding your time to speak on this issue.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty, should be pretty obvious to them, I would hope. And they obviously have the ability to send commentary, anything to yourselves or to staff, and ask it to be attached to the packet. There's other ways that they can kind of, I guess, double dip.
So are people happy with what the change is there on number 10? I mean, we really are going to learn from this. So we just have to kind of pick a starting point and then see how it goes.
Mm-hmm. And what we'll do is we will, once we have this, we will post this on our department page. And when, you know, we may have a link to it on the agendas to say, here are the guidelines. So that we can even have copies of this with the, where we put the agendas outside of the meeting room, and a place to find it on the website, and a number of places make it very obvious. So everybody can kind of know the rules of the game going in. And then if there are any changes, it will be only because you all allow it.
Well, I appreciate that you and Dan put this together. We need something like this.
To actually, credit goes, starts with Aaron, our planning specialist, who's works at our front desk. This was one of his first planning projects, and then gave it to me, and I made edits, and then gave it to Dan, who made more edits. So,
thank you all. It's a place to start. Are you going to add any words to the chairperson preamble that says, oh, by the way, we have guidelines now, read and heed?
It's up to you. It's,
well, whatever. I'm going to put something in. If this,
yeah, I think you should. I have a, I got a jet to something.
Yeah. We're past.
Require some travel time.
No pun intended with your background. Do you have there?
There you go.
All right. Well, I think we're done. We're where we need to be on the comp plan. We've looked at this guidelines, and we'll try them out.
Okay. Yeah, so I think we should put this on the next agenda for official approval by the board. In the start of the meeting or the end of the meeting,
we'll do it at the start.
Can you send us a copy as they've been edited?
Yes. What I do, you want this? The next meeting is Orange Avenue. So are you okay with having this on there as well, or putting it before? If we have smaller items, say we have a lot split, a lakefront or something like that, we will place those prior to Orange Avenue, because to make somebody sit through
right
unknown amount of time to get a lot split or something that meets all the criteria is maybe a little bit too much, but if you're okay having this on the having this for Orange Avenue, so at least the rules are in place prior to the speakers of Orange Avenue. I can certainly put it on the agenda.
But I can almost see this like a consent item. We've already kind of workshopped it, so almost like the minutes, unless the board needs further discussion, I think it could just be approved as a simple business matter.
Okay, we can do it that way. And if you send it out to everybody and people, you know, provide comments, and then maybe Bront, you can collect all the comments and put a final version and send that out. And we'll try it.
Sounds good.
If it blows up, we'll blame David.
And why not?
You're why right. not?
And Allison.
Don't and forget. Allison, of course. We found this on her computer, so. Okay, guys. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We're adjourned.
Take care.